It seems increasingly likely that I really will undertake the expedition that has been preoccupying my imagination now for some days. An expedition, I should say, which I will undertake alone in the comfort of Mr. Faraday's Ford. An expedition which, as I foresee it, will take me through much of the finest countryside of England to the West Country, and may keep me away from Darlington Hall for as much as 5 or 6 days. The idea of such a journey came about, I should point out, from a most kind suggestion put to me by Mr. Faraday himself one afternoon, almost a fortnight ago, when I had been dusting the portraits in the library. In fact, as I recall, I was up on the stepladder dusting the portrait of Viscount Wetherby when my employer had entered carrying a few volumes, which he presumably wished returned to the shelves. On seeing my person, he took the opportunity to inform me that he had just that moment finalized plans to return to the United States for a period of 5 weeks, between August and September. Having made this announcement, my employer put his volumes down on a table, seated himself on the chaise longue, and stretched out his legs. It was then, gazing up at me, that he said, "You realize, Stevens, I don't expect you to be locked up here in this house all the time I'm away. Why don't you take the car and drive off somewhere for a few days? You look like you could make good use of a break." Coming out of the blue, as it did, I did not quite know how to reply to such a suggestion. I recall thanking him for his consideration, but quite probably I said nothing very definite, for my employer went on, "I'm serious, Stevens. I really think you should take a break. I'll foot the bill for the gas." "You fellows, you're always locked up in these big houses helping out. How do you ever get to see around this beautiful country of yours?" This was not the first time my employer had raised such a question. Indeed, it seems to be something which genuinely troubled him. On this occasion, in fact, a reply of sorts did occur to me as I stood up there on the ladder, a reply to the effect that those of our profession, although we did not see a great deal of the country in the sense of touring the countryside and visiting picturesque sites, did actually see more of England than most, placed as we were in houses where the greatest ladies and gentlemen of the land gathered. Of course, I could not have expressed this view to Mr. Faraday without embarking upon what might have seemed a presumptuous speech. I thus contented myself by simply saying, "It has been my privilege to see the best of England over the years, sir, within these very walls." Mr. Faraday did not seem to understand this statement, for he merely went on, "I mean it, Stevens. It's wrong that a man can't get to see around his own country. Take my advice. Get out of the house for a few days." As you might expect, I did not take Mr. Faraday's suggestion at all seriously that afternoon, regarding it as just another instance of an American gentleman's unfamiliarity with what was and what was not commonly done in England. The fact that my attitude to this same suggestion underwent a change over the following days, indeed, that the notion of a trip to the West Country took an ever-increasing hold on my thoughts, is no doubt substantially attributable to, and why should I hide it, the arrival of Miss Kenton's letter, her first in almost 7 years, if one discounts the Christmas cards. But let me make it immediately clear what I mean by this. What I mean to say is that Miss Kenton's letter set off a certain chain of ideas to do with professional matters here at Darlington Hall, and I would underline that it was a preoccupation with these very same professional matters that led me to consider anew my employer's kindly meant suggestion. But let me explain further. The fact is, over the past few months, I have been responsible for a series of small errors in the carrying out of my duties. I should say that these errors have all been, without exception, quite trivial in themselves. Nevertheless, I think you will understand that to one not accustomed to committing such errors, this development was rather disturbing. And I did, in fact, begin to entertain all sorts of alarmist theories as to their cause. As so often occurs in these situations, I had become blind to the obvious. That is, until my pondering over the implications of Miss Kenton's letter finally opened my eyes to the simple truth, that these small errors of recent months have derived from nothing more sinister than a faulty staff plan. It is, of course, the responsibility of every butler to devote his utmost care in the devising of a staff plan. Who knows how many quarrels, false accusations, unnecessary dismissals, how many promising careers cut short can be attributed to a butler's slovenliness at the stage of drawing up the staff plan. Indeed, I can say I am in agreement with those who say that the ability to draw up a good staff plan is the cornerstone of any decent butler's skills. I have, myself, devised many staff plans over the years, and I do not believe I am being unduly boastful if I say that very few ever needed amendment. And if, in the present case, the staff plan is at fault, blame can be laid at no one's door but my own. At the same time, it is only fair to point out that my task, in this instance, had been of an unusually difficult order.